you to think for a moment. What thoughts most occupy your mind? And you don't have to share out. You can if you want to. But I just always like to say you don't have to. But, like, what are you thinking about most of the time?
God, this is too much responsibility. I gotta get out of it.
Okay. Fair.
When what?
What are your thoughts? What thoughts most occupy your mind?
Oh, just in general?
Yeah, just in general.
Right now, the fact that I've got 4 events this week.
God, this is too much responsibility. I gotta get out.
I'm responsible for at least part of every single one of them.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna have you draw. This is kind of. I wanted to just. That question was to stimulate your brain. I want you to draw a shape, though similar to the one below. Only make each piece the approximate size of how much time and energy your brain spends there. Not your body, you know, not like, but your brain. I know your brain is part of your body. So here's my example. And you can do circles if you want to do circles. I had cheated because I can use arrows really easily. Most of my time is on the future. I know, like, I'm anxious about something that's going to happen or I'm thinking about this. Then I would say past is my second biggest. Right? Okay. And then the present is definitely my smallest, but I can only make it so small and still show up. So go ahead and draw a shape. For you,
where do your thoughts lie?
Yes, Winston?
It's a little hard for me because I did like the biggest chunk of the future, but mm-hmm. part of what I'm thinking about the future is thinking about how that past is going to affect the future. Mm. So it's kind of like, I'm not really thinking about the past, I'm just thinking about it in relation to the future. So yeah. It's, but I am thinking about it, so I don't know.
Well, I would pick your future as the biggest.
Yeah
but.
Yeah, I will say since being on anti-anxiety medication, I do a lot less ruminating about things in the past than I used to. Because that was that's a problem for me.
Mm-hmm. Luke?
So, past is definitely the least. It really
it doesn't
like,
matter. It's
present is a weird one because I'm like, is present like immediately now or is it today?
Living in the moment.
Living in the moment, yes.
Okay, so, future probably is first, but we would say that, you know, most of future is the next today, then this week, and you know, 3 months from now is very small. If that makes sense.
Okay, so you're mostly hanging about the day, you would say.
Yeah.
Near future.
So near like,
future.
Yeah, near
future.
Future. So almost present, near future.
Almost present, but.
That's fair.
Near future.
That's better than me. I think, like, my future is, so I'm like, whoa, if I do this, then this will happen, then this will happen.
What's my retirement fund going to do?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Itty bitty little past. Average present. Giant near future, and in near future, I mean the next 3 months.
Okay.
And then distant future is about the same as present.
Awesome. But mom,
maybe less, but.
I agree with almost everybody, except for my near future is tomorrow. I don't have a. I don't have 6 months to think about.
Thanks for that depressing thought.
Well, I mean, you just real. I think you. There's a time in your life that you realize that if you're going to do it, you got to get it done now.
Mm.
You know, so.
No, it's more like I'm constantly thinking about. You know, what do I need to do for Sunday school? What do I need to do for work? What deadlines are coming up?
Mm-hmm. If I can just get through this week, things will calm down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they never do. I'm just thankful I have the day off after trunk retreat and my job interview on the same day.
Ooh.
You know, maybe that's
Wait,
a good thing, though.
Winston was going to say something.
I'm almost always right now thinking about, like, where am I going to live for most of my life? And will I have a job? Because weirdness at my work. And, like, what will my job be? So I'm very much thinking about, like, deep future stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not thinking about, like, near, like, months. I'm thinking decades.
Well, I'm thinking, what is, like, so what I think, I'm kind of more, I'm a both and. Like, there's some, like, how am I going to handle this situation with my children? And, like, at work, like, what's the next solution? And then there's the, what is the church going to do now that SNAP benefits are being cut off? How can we help even though we're small? Like, what are we going to do? How is society going to change? So I have a much, like, that's the future I think about. What are we going to do as, unfortunately, things seem to be going worse?
Yeah.
And how? What does that mean for us as Christians, and how do we respond to that? That's the future I think about a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so we're gonna put a pin on this as we talk about Philippians, because this is the chapter that has the "Do not be anxious about anything," right? And a lot of our anxiety, if you do any sort of mindfulness, will tell you your anxiety usually comes because you're thinking about the future or the past. When you're in the moment, there's less anxiety. Not always, because there are some things that definitely trigger anxiety, but all of that. But we're going to put a pin in that. So I want to do something a little fun. Find the person with the shoe that is most similar to yours
together.
Yeah. Judging by some of the comments, it sounds like some of you had more memories than others. Past your school. That's okay, because I put in a little outline of each chapter. So Philippians 1, we had the greeting. And then we talked about how community should shape our desires. We are called to be in community. And, like, our desires should be shaped by our community. It's not about, unlike what America tells you, you are not the most important person. The church as a whole should be working together to shape our desires and what we're trying to get. And we need fellowship to keep our joy. Like, we talked about how there's a lot going on in this world that is not joyful, and we need the fellowship.
Oh.
It's an, anyway, and then Paul celebrates the gospel of Christ being preached. He's like, I don't care if they're doing it out of poor motives, but I'm happy that the gospel's preached. And we talked about living a lot worthy of the gospel. Then we went to Philippians 2, which, again, kind of that fellowship is a real big piece of this. Your fellowship should shape your desires. Then Philippians 2 says, value others above yourself. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling, which I think is really important and something that historically the American church hasn't always been good at, because we had the, like, you know, the one and done salvation kind of thing versus the, like, you actually have to put in work and work to be sanctified and still follow God. You can't, like, just say, God, forgive me, and then go live your life how you want. And then we talked about do everything without grumbling, and how grumbling specifically is complaints against God and not just, like, complaints about the world. And that was really important. And that was one of the biggest things I learned when I was things, because I was like, oh, I've always understood this as do everything without complaining, but it's not what it actually means. Like, you're allowed to vent and rant. It's when you are blaming God for the situation, that's grumbling.
God, why didn't you make me a billionaire?
Yeah, right? That's grumbling.
Say it!
And then all of this so we can rejoice in salvation. And lastly, God provides family as we follow him, because sometimes it's really lonely when you choose to follow God. Especially right now, it can be when you choose to follow God versus what people's ideas of God are can cause divisions. And then Luke did Philippians 3, which was no confidence in the flesh. Like, who we are is not, it's all about Christ. We have to keep working towards salvation. That's Paul's big thing in Philippians 2. Like, you got to keep moving forward. We're eagerly awaiting Christ. So those are your summary. And now we're going to start with Philippians 4. Okay, this is our final greeting. And honestly, the meat of Philippians 4 is, like, verses 4 through 10. And we're really going to dig into those. And then the rest of Philippians is kind of like the closing letter, like, you know, your conclusions that you would write in an essay. So it's not as exciting. Can I volunteer to read Philippians 4, 1 through 3?
Therefore, my brother and sister, you whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord in this way, dear friends. I plead with Eudora, and I plead with Syntyche. To be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, help these women, since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are in the book of life.
Great. So first thing, this little ending, like, Paul deeply cares about the Philippians, and some commentary suggests, like, this, like, ending is, like, essentially... My note on this when I was studying this was Paul's favorite. Paul is like, they are my joy and crown. I love them. They are mostly doing, you know, like, so as a teacher, I know this. You know how, like, as an example of this, if you know, so your principal's like, we need a student to represent your class. And you're like, Well, I'm definitely not picking the church at Corinth. They do not have it together. But, you know, the church at Philippi, they got this. That's kind of how, like, I feel like what Paul's saying here. Like, they're the student that you're like, I'm not bragging about you. Like, I'm not necessarily saying the church at Corinth couldn't do it. I'm just saying that the likelihood is that the church of Philippi's got it more together. Anyway, go ahead, Ellie.
Well, I just wanted to remark that this is softening me toward Paul, because I've always assumed that he was part of the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
Oh!
But, yeah.
He's really
he's got
not.
Women who he holds in high regard.
Oh, he has lots of women.
It's
all
just right. Marriage he's not a fan of.
And then this one right here, this light, like, there has been much ink and stuff spilled. Like, what were they arguing about? We have no idea. I don't understand the point of, like, we don't know, right? Like, these two women were arguing about something. And he's like, help them work it out, is basically what Paul is saying. Mm-hmm. Like, they matter to me. I don't want to see their friendship destroyed. Yeah. So please help them work it out. That's all it's saying. Because Paul deeply cares about unity. Unity is very important to Paul, is what I think I put on your sheet. It's not, but that's basically what this is getting at. We're not going to go into who are these women, what do these women want, who's Clement. Like, the reality is they're women who had a disagreement, and Paul was like, don't let them lose their friendship because they're fighting over something silly. Or big. I don't know what they're fighting about. Anyway. All right.
We had this circumcision discussion.
Yeah, all right. And now we're really going to dig into, we're going to do Philippians 4 through 7 really kind of deeply, because this is where, like, the meat is. So can I have a volunteer read the one verse?
Okay. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice.
Awesome. So, right, this can be hard, because sometimes rejoicing, right, is difficult. You're like, why would I rejoice right now? I remember when I was going through my depression towards the end, one of my friends quoted this verse to me. And I will say, I was on my way out. So it actually came like, I was like, I can rejoice in God, right? But if you would have quoted this to me, like, in the depths of my depression, I would have probably thrown something at you. Like, that's not very helpful. But here's the thing. When I was looking this up, the word for rejoice is kairio. And it is a choice. It is an action more than an emotional feeling or intellectual assent. So he's not saying, be joyful. Like, and I think that's important. It's not like, I want you to feel joy. It's more of the, I am choosing to rejoice in God. I'm choosing to trust God, to worship God. I'm choosing to put my faith in God. Which is not necessarily the same thing as, be joyful. It's fine. Ignore everything that's going bad. This is not joy from inside out. You know, like, he's like, nothing is wrong. Everything is great. Why are you sad? Nope. This is very much I am choosing to put my trust and my joy in Christ, not in my current circumstances. Okay. And then the next one. Before we do that, I think the next slide, when I think of choice and I think of the world today, I think about this clip from Lord of the Rings. So if you don't know the story, first off, I'm sorry. And second off,
what is wrong with you?
That's what I wanted to say. Secondly, Frodo has to carry this ring of Mordor. It's like this evil ring. He's the only one who can carry it. And he says, here, basically, I really didn't want this job. And I think about the world today. Sometimes I'm like, I really don't want this. So here we go.
I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. There are other forces at work in this world, Frodo, besides the Lethal. Bilbo was meant to find the ring. In which case, you also are meant to have it. And that is an encouraging thought.
Scandal.
Hey, like, I appreciate this a lot. And it's also, like, the choice. Like, all we have to do is choose what we're going to do, right?
It's almost like Tolkien was Christian. He threw up the first advance the world
Yes.
Both wars.
Yes. So, and, you know, but, like, as
specifically trench warfare at some
point. Yeah. But I think about this quote a lot, right? The only thing I can do, like, choose is... Nobody says, sign me up to be a part of this part of history that's terrible, right? No one... Right? But God, in his infinite wisdom and grace, has put us all here at this time. And sometimes the world seems really awful, and I don't feel like rejoicing. But it is a choice what I'm going to do with what... Like, I am here. I can't just be like, God... I wish you would have put me over there. I think I would have aced that one because I already know what happened in history and hindsight's 2020. So I would have aced it if I lived there, right? And then he's like, well, you live here. And you have to choose what you're going to do. And since rejoice, that like that choice, I'm going to trust in God. I'm going to still live my life like God is king. And I'm going to live my life like heaven's on earth. And it's...
Can we do some good is left in this world that it's worth fighting for next?
I almost did that, but I used that in a sermon before, and so I was like, I can't keep using the same Lord of the Rings quotes.
Samwise Gamgee is an OG.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
So what is this? EPIEK?
We're on to that one next.
Oh, okay.
Nah, Philippians 4:5. Another volunteer.
I'll do it. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near.
So then I went down this whole, like, okay, we're rejoicing, and I don't, for me, and as who I am as a person, my rejoicing I would not describe as gentle. So I was like, I'm confused. Rejoice, and then be gentle. And I'm like, I don't get it. Also, I just would not describe me as a person as gentle. Like, it's just not who I am. And so then I was like, what does this word mean? And I was fascinated. So... Epicus is the Greek word for quote-unquote what is right or fitting. And I found that interesting because every translation I looked at still used gentleness. So there's definitely something there scholars know that I do not.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But also, my summary of the whole big paragraph about this word is only the one who has power does not need to flaunt it. And so that's what it's saying. Like, we are to live... And the power and the rejoicing of Christ, like, you know, we've already won. But we don't have to shove it in people's faces. Like, because Christ won, we won. Right? Like, I know at the end of the day where I'm going to spend all of eternity. And I also know at the end of the day, and this is very far future, I know what's going to happen and who's going to win at the end of everything. Right? Sometimes I have to go that far in the future to feel peace. Like, I'm like, someday... We're all going to heaven, and this world is going to pass away, and it's all going to be good. And that actually gives me more peace. But, and we should live like we know that without saying, you know, na 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 poo poo, I'm winning. Like, that's what the gentleness to all is. The only people who have power don't need to flaunt it. So you're rejoicing in the fact that God is good and that he is worthy. And then, and in that rejoicing, you don't need to rub it into other people and be like, you're falling down. So this word gentleness is often used of Christ in Philippians 2:5. It's the same thing where it talks about when he emptied it, he humbled himself and all of that. So, like, Christ didn't need to rub it in. And that's something that always amazes me because, like, I know I get defensive. You did this? No, I didn't. And I'll show you why, you know? And he's just like, I'm not going to say anything. There's no point. And I'm like, no, let me prove to you that I'm right. So something definitely I should work on. Yes.
Could you use confidence instead of gentleness?
I mean, yes and no. I would say no. I think it works well to, like, understand it that way, but it's just, it's much more of this, like, I can be kind to you even if you say something wrong or stupid or, like, I don't need to prove to you that I'm worth something. Because I think, like, a good example, I think, would be civil rights and the segregation movement when they just didn't respond. Like, when they were attacked at counters and things. I mean, the horrible things people did to them. And they didn't respond. That's the kind of gentleness it's talking about. And I don't have a good word for that, but that is what this means. Yes?
It's just the first thing that I thought of before you said that was... Peggy Carter in the Agent Carter.
Oh!
I knew you'd like this.
I know. I know what you're gonna say.
In the, I don't remember which. I think it was the end of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
When her supervisor took full credit for something she'd done to save the world, essentially, and her coworker's like, "Are you gonna just let him do that?" She's like, "I know my worth."
Yeah. No one else's opinion really matters, and I, it's just, and yeah. So it's them, right? Because like for me. If I was in the civil rights movement, right, and I went, like, there is no way my personality that I would have been able to just sit there and been like, you want to go? Let's go. Like, I'm very much my, but that's what changed the world, right? Because if they would have fought back, if Jesus would have fought back, right, if Peggy would have fought back, like, choose your thing. Everyone would have remembered them fighting back and not everything else, right? Like, it's the not fighting back that, and this is future on, but that's what changed the world. And that's, I think, really a lot of what this is getting at. Go ahead.
So two thoughts. First on the not fighting back thing, like, it just kind of hits, just like, I feel so often people criticize the method no matter what, just to avoid talking about the method.
That is very true.
Doesn't matter what you do, they're gonna criticize.
Shouldn't protest this way, you should do it this way.
Yeah. But going to the word, like, the way it makes sense to me is strength and humility.
Yes, meekness is another way this word is translated. So yeah, the strength and humility. And that is something that I know I need to grow in. Because sometimes I'm like, I don't want to talk about this because I know I'm just going to fight. Versus, like, I can just say this and then let you respond. And leave it at that. So, I just thought this was really interesting to get into. Because I didn't really understand what it meant with let your gentleness be evident to all. Right? And then we have Philippians 4, 6 through 7. Oops, pretend that's not there. I must have put that out of the click. Anyway, can someone read these?
Not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus Christ.
So I found this very interesting, and I'm just going to skip ahead to what I was going to say because it's already up here. But the plural of meramanai, which is cares, is often used for the cares of life, which disturb sleep. From which refuge is sought in love or drink, and which only death can end.
Wow.
Like, so the, like, these are not, like, you know, I'm worried about talking about my boss.
What is it, the Lego movie where there's a little star in the cave?
Oh! Super Mario.
The only relief is the sweet release of death.
Yes. Yes. So, so this is not just, like, I'm anxious about what I'm going to say to this person. This is the I can't sleep type of cares. Like, or, you know, I can't, all of my, everything is focused on this.
So where is that in the verse?
Right.
Sorry. Oh, sorry. Do not be anxious about anything. It's talking about here with anything.
Okay.
Is, like, this is the anything, the present your request. Oh, sorry. The another translation literally says care. it's the anxious. Don't be anxious. Like, don't care this much.
Don't wait for the sweet release of death.
Yes. Don't, like, and don't catastrophize, right? I know for a long time I would get so anxious if someone didn't respond back to me. I'm like, they're dead.
Uh-huh.
They're definitely dead. That is the only reason they could have gone.
What is my mom doing besides being my mom?
Yeah.
Surely she must be dead if she's not picking up the phone
and
I need her.
Yes. And I definitely, or like voicemails. God, I hated voicemails. I'm much better now, but I used to, like, they left a voicemail, someone's dead. They've called to tell me that someone is dead, and this is terrible, right? Just if you left me a voicemail.
Okay.
I'm not that way anymore, okay? Like, my anxiety is medicated.
The talk to text.
Yeah.
A voicemail is a godsend because I can get the gist of,
I was like, the only reason they could possibly be leaving a voicemail is that they wanted to tell me someone was dead. My anxiety was rampant and uncontrolled. Then I got medication and therapy and more of Jesus, and man, do I love a much saner life. But it's talking about, like, those that do not be anxious. So, like, and others, says care, and the verse that says cast all your cares upon him because he cares for you, same word. So that's what this is referring to, like, not just like, what should I wear tomorrow, or I'm kind of nervous, I want to ask this boy out, or whatever. It's not the little anxieties. It's the big ones that make you not be able to sleep, or the ones that you're, like, constantly thinking about all day. And he's saying, but, like, and giving you a way out, right? Not just don't be anxious, right? Have you ever tried to tell someone who was really upset, calm down? Why don't you just calm down? Has that ever worked in the history of life? Ever? No. He's saying, not only don't be anxious, in every situation by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God. So he's like, you pray, you petition, which means you can pray some more, right? Like the parable of the persistent widow. God doesn't mind if you keep bringing up the same thing. And also with thanksgiving, with knowing that he has answered prayers before and he can and will handle this. And then the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. And this is one of those big things. I definitely have felt the peace that transcends understanding. There's times where God has called me to something. People are like, what are you going to do? No idea. But it's going to be okay. Times God has like, you're going to seminary. And I'm like, well, where are you going? I don't know. And you would think with someone with my anxious temperament that I would be much more. But I was like, nope, God's got this. I don't know, but God does. And then the other thing, I love this quote. All of these are from the Theological Dictionary of the New Testament. Or summaries that I took from them. But this quote is from that as well. And I love this quote. The NT realizes that life is swayed by care. Concern is unavoidable, but it is given a new orientation. Liberation from it comes as one casts it upon God. Not because God grants every wish, but because prayer grants freedom from care. And I really love that. It's and the freedom from care and like the freedom from anxiety. Like that's what prayer, it's not like I'm going to rub this magic lamp and God's going to, that's why I'm okay. But it's, I trust in God so much that whatever happens is going to be for good. And that's what this is getting to. So I really love that quote. So our ability to rejoice, show gentleness, and not to be consumed by the concerns of this world come directly from our relationship with God, right? It takes prayer and petition and thanksgiving, right? You cannot just do this because you've got willpower. Your willpower is not strong enough. Maybe it is for a little while, but it will eventually crumble. And then we're going to keep going. So Philippians 4, 8 through 9. Can someone read that for us?
What?
I can read more.
Sorry. Lee was
going to read.
Didn't you say you were going to read? Oh, maybe she didn't. Anyway, well, somebody read.
I was gonna.
Okay, go. Yeah.
Okay. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you.
Yeah, definitely has this theme. He's coming back to peace. You all are very anxious. You're worried about the troubles you're facing. But I want you to come back to peace. And I've been talking for a long time, and I knew I would be, so I wanted to switch it on to you. What do you notice about the list of things Paul says we should keep our minds on?
It's more what he doesn't say.
Okay, what do you notice about what he doesn't
say? He doesn't say any physical or, he doesn't say the words, we shouldn't. We shouldn't, though.
Yeah, there's not a thou shall not list.
Right.
Very positive.
It's very subjective.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's asking you to look at what you think is
mm-hmm.
actually a good point that he doesn't say, don't think about this or that, because it's been proven that if you try not to think about something, you will continue to think about it.
Yeah, and it's like he's saying, focus on the helpers.
Like Mr. Rogers, yeah. You know, whatever is good. There is good, you know, that just like Kelly quoted earlier. I know. There is good to this world, and it's good in this world, and it's worth fighting for. And it's really easy, especially today, to focus on, oh my God, what is happening? But there's still goodness, right? And God is still very, very present. Two words that I thought were interesting. So I looked up all of these words, and most of them mean what you think they mean. But I thought the two that I thought were interesting are just a fun thing. Like, so, right here. So, Greek does not have a separate word for righteousness and justice. They are one and the same. And that's the same actually in Spanish, right? There's several languages because you can't be righteous without having justice. They're like, English separates them. English has more words, I believe, than any other language, because what English does is it just takes words from other languages.
We beat up other languages in dark alleys and steal their grammar.
Yes, and we also just take, and their words. And like, we have so many words because we're like, we can take that word, and then we can take that word. Oh, and we'll take all of these words, right? So, like, English doesn't really ever say no to words. And so they're like, we got lots of words. You can be
a
very precise.
For
yeah.
Me.
Yes.
A little Schadenfreude.
Yes. So English has you can be very precise with English, but I do think the righteousness and justice is a disservice in the English language, because you can't separate those terms in Greek, or Spanish is a good one. I would say other languages, but I don't know for sure. But because righteousness and justice are connected. You can't act right without having a larger sense of justice as well. You can't be in the right if society is, you know, not being just. So they're very, very tied together. And then whatever is pure, I love this. The quote that it had, like the quote unquote, was what awakens awe. And I would never have thought that was pure. In fact, I had to go back and check, because for a second I thought that was noble when I was going through my like stuff, and I was like, I don't think I wrote this down right. But the word for pure here is what awakens awe.
I love that, because purity, like I've been at war with purity for a while, like in like purity culture, like, you know. But like to think of purity as something that just inspires like the appreciation for the power of God.
And so as I was like studying this, like it, a lot of this is what Christ is doing or has done in the world. Christ defines himself as truth, right? Whatever is noble. Can't think of really anyone more noble than Christ. Like, right? Justice, righteousness, pure, lovely. And so again, he's kind of really in a roundabout way saying, set your minds on Christ. But also, in case you don't know what that means, here are 8 different words of what you can set your mind on, good things that are of Christ, right? And also, as like Sarah said, like when someone says don't think about something, you will think about it. And so if you're trying to change your thoughts or your heart, right, you don't do it by like condemning yourself by saying, oh man, that was racist. I really wish I didn't have that thought, right? You change it by saying, well, that's not good. But what could I think more positively? What is the positive note I could say? And instead of